I'm a little bit nervous to share a lot of this stuff just because my emotions aren't all that together. But I don't want this to be like an episode of Home Makeover, you know, where everybody's crying at the end. And that's not my intention. And just ask that God would give me strength to be able to communicate clearly, because I just want to emphasize that one thing before I give a lot of details, and that one thing is that this trip was not about me at all. I felt completely like a vessel on this trip. At times, I was very weak, and I felt very ineffective. I was empty of my own ability. And I know you've probably all been in situations like that. I felt like that almost every day. So I desire that you give me no praise or no pat on the back, because I really felt like this was Jesus's work, and I was just honored to be the vessel. Like when you get your tax refund, nobody frames the envelope. Well, I felt like an envelope. I was just an instrument being played. I was not the musician. And so I went to honor Jesus in all of this and not myself. This is about him and it's not about me. I do want to reread something that I got out of Helen Rosevere's, her biography. She went to Africa and she was there in the 60s and 70s as a doctor. And it's so good. I read it once, but I'm going to read it again. If you think, this is what someone told her when she went to the mission field. If you think you've come to the mission field because you're a little better than others, or as the cream of your church, or because of your medical degree, or for the service you can render the African church, or even for the souls you may see saved, you will fail. Remember, the Lord has only one purpose ultimately for each one of us, to make us more like Jesus. He's interested in your relationship with himself. Let him take you and mold you as he will. All the rest will take its rightful place. And although I felt a lot in 15 days in Liberia, I think that the most work was probably done in my own heart. But I do want to share with you a lot, and I'll talk and share some things, and I'll have some pictures, and then I'll show you a video, and then I'll talk some more and show another video. So we're going to be here for hours. Just kidding. And if I can't get through, I didn't tell Dave this. I wrote everything down, so if I can't get through it, he's going to have to just come up and read it. But I trust God will give me the grace to do that. Let me just give you some general facts about the country itself really quickly that I didn't know until I was planning on going there, but it helps to understand the mindset of the people that are there. Liberia is still recovering from a devastating civil war that affected the whole country. It has a very poor educational system that most people can't even afford to send their kids to. It's kind of you're going to school, awesome. Because it's a really a status thing to have your kids be in school, because you have to pay for that. But the system itself is very poor. They have very poor healthcare system. In fact, the life expectancy average is 47. And the hospitals are not places of consistent professional care. I know we all have our preferences to hospitals here. Well, I will never go there, and this happened there. You would really not even want to go step your foot in the door at these hospitals. They're just not what we would consider to be a hospital. And I know Micah Dunseith had some surgery done there, and Tammy said she would never go back. They will fly out and go to the Ivory Coast if they had to, or Ghana, but they would not go to the hospitals there. They were just very unsanitary and unprofessional. 85% of the Liberians are unemployed, so how a lot of them generate income is they will go down to the barges where the ships come in, and these ships are full of containers, like a semi, and it's full of donated items. Clothing, shoes, even food aid, rice, and bulgur wheat, it's all donated to Liberia. And someone will buy that container, and then they will sell it to individuals. And these individuals will fill up their wheelbarrow of used clothing like we would buy at Goodwill. And then they will try to peddle that on the streets to make a small profit so that they can then pay for the rice that's supposed to be free. And so that they can get a little bit more so that next time they can go and get another wheelbarrow full. So you'll see, everywhere I go, you see just wheelbarrows full of a lot of junk that people try to sell to somehow make a profit. But that's, at least they're doing something. They're not just sitting around. Most homes have no electricity or indoor plumbing. There were a couple places I was in. You'll see Emmanuel up here on the screen in a little bit. He had a generator, and so he also had a small computer. He was the only Liberian I saw with a computer. But most places don't have indoor plumbing or electricity, so that made things pretty difficult when we were out, when we would go and visit people. There's also garbage everywhere, piles of garbage. They just throw their garbage wherever. There's no law or even an interest really in cleaning up. Liberia has so many problems that I guess maybe that's way down on the list, but there's just piles of garbage, and on those piles of garbage are dogs, stray dogs, and rats, and people live right next to them. It's very, very poor sanitation. There are many family members who live in one home, but usually the only thing that happens in the home is they sleep there. There's nothing in a home to keep people interested in being inside, unless it's raining. So there's no, you know, televisions or comfy couches to lay on. It's just a home, and oftentimes there's mats on the floor. Sometimes there's beds. But that's the majority. We were in other homes that were nicer. But the majority of Liberians just live in very simple homes that they're in just to sleep. In fact, all the cooking and all of that is done outside, and you'll see pictures of that as well. It's very hot and very humid most of the year. In fact, it was 85 to 95 the days that we were there, but we were right at the beginning of the rainy season, so it rained even a couple days while we were there. So it was hot, but it wasn't unbearable like it can be in the dry season when you're there. We had three things that we wanted to get done, and they were encourage the missionaries that are there, to encourage the ladies' Bible study that Tammy had started, and the seminary students that Gary left behind when the seminary closed. And the third thing was to find someone to help take over providing food for the orphanage, and we were able to get all three of those things done. The first thing that we did the very first day we were there is walk around the campus where all these missionaries live. They live it's a campus, like a camp, kind of, right on the ocean. It's beautiful. It's right on the ocean. And all the missionaries live in this same camp that Tammy had contact with. They lived on that campus as well. It's nice because you can have electricity there. They have a huge generator that you can get your electricity from. And also they have campus security, which is very needed. And they all hire security guards at each of their homes that are there. Some have them there 24/7. Others just have them there at night. And it's a needed thing to have that secure place. So we stayed there on that campus when we were in Liberia, and so we had electricity and we had a bathroom, and it was very nice to be able to come home after a day of walking on sewage and being with people who aren't used to, you know, the standards of sanitation that you're used to. It was really nice to come back and be able to shower and to have that. So we walked around encouraging the missionaries that were there on the campus that Tammy knew and had lived with and were neighbors with. The average missionary there in Liberia is there for only 2 years. It's a very difficult place to live full time. It's a very hard field. We listened to their griefs and their triumphs and their prayer requests, and we prayed with them. And it was a really good first day because I understood a lot of what they were struggling with before I was really spending a lot of time with Liberians. So I was really thankful for that because I got to understand a little bit more of the culture before I was kind of just thrown into it. one of our goals was to help them and encourage them as much as we could. So we helped. There was one family that was packing up to go to furlough, so we spent a whole half a day helping them pack. We babysat some of their kids so they could go out on a date. We even took a couple of the ladies out to dinner. We brought them gifts when we came of their favorite foods. A couple of them had ordered computers, and we put them in our suitcases and carried them over for them. We brought toys to their kids and books and other computer accessories that you just can't really get while you're there. So I hope that we were an encouragement to them. I was really awed at some of the sacrifices they make to live there. And you know that their love for the Lord is real because they are sacrificing daily to be there to give the gospel to the Liberians. And, now I have a slide, so I have to see if it will cut. Can I have that first picture? Yes, thank you. This is Gary and Tammy's home that they built on the campus when they lived in Liberia. And you really have to build your own house. So you hire Liberian workers and you just wing it. And you get the materials that you hope to get, and often it's not the right thing, so you gotta use a lot of duct tape, I guess. But so this is their home, and they have a fence surrounding their home for security reasons, and then it was razor wire along the top, but that is since, because they live right on the ocean, it's since just corroded. There's another picture, I believe. Oh, wait, I can do that now. Yes, there we go. That's their gate and their fence, and so we went and visited there. There's another missionary family living there now. But that is where they lived when they were in Liberia, at least the last year and a half while they were there. The second thing that we were able to do while we were there was encourage the ladies of Tammy's Bible study and encourage the seminary students that Gary had. We spent almost 4 full days with the ladies. We walked around and we talked with them and we studied the Bible together and we challenged them. Tammy did a lot of that. She had already a connection with them. So a lot of times I was with the kids, and there were kids always. There were kids everywhere, especially when you'd see white ladies handing out candy. They just, there were always a lot of kids. And so when Tammy would sit down a lot of times and talk with the ladies, I would try to entertain the kids. And I couldn't understand them a lot of times because they would talk so quickly in their Liberian English. But we made it work. And when we were with the ladies, they introduced us to a lot of the Liberian food. So I'll show you a couple of those. Oh, that's a lizard. My kids wanted to see the lizard. They were everywhere, even more so than in Florida. When I was in Florida a couple years ago, you could step on them while you're walking. There were a lot of lizards.
Is that also Liberian food?
No, it is not. They're very hard to catch. That does remind me, though, there isn't a lot of wildlife in Liberia. There are lizards, and occasionally you'll see a monkey, but because of the Civil War and because there was no food, all the animals were eaten because you need to eat. In fact, just recently in the last couple of years have there been more dogs around because if you need to eat, you eat what you can catch. So, this was a salted fish. They live right on the ocean, so they put a lot of fish into a lot of their food, which I really liked. I liked all their food. This is Edith. She's cooking up the fish for me. They all cook on these coal pots. There are no ovens or stoves, so they buy coal and they cook everything over on a coal pot. So it smells. Everywhere you go, you can have that smell of coal burning. And that's Edith. She's making that meal for me. This is cassava on the bottom. It's a root plant. It looks like a potato, and it has the texture of a potato, but it tastes like a cracker. It was pretty good. The big thing is they call it a pumpkin, but it's like a squash. It's like, it tastes like an acorn squash. And then they have the peppers. They put peppers in everything. And when we would have the ladies cook for us, we would ask that they not break the peppers. So they would cook them with it, and then we would take ours out, and then they'd break all the peppers up. Because we just couldn't, it was very hot, couldn't eat it. And everything is rice. You have rice, and then you have some kind of soup on top of it. So we had potato greens, and we had pumpkin, and we had all kinds of different kind of soup. And this is the cassava. We grilled out the cassava. And more cassava. This is the Bible study group and most of the ladies that we spent time with. And the reason the picture's kind of goofy is because I was helping care for the kids, and they messed up my camera, and I pushed a bunch of buttons, and I didn't know how to fix it. It took me a whole day to fix it. But Tammy's there, and sitting next to Grandma, who is blind, and she is just a beautiful soul who loves the Lord, and they made the connection, and that's how they started their Bible study. And Grandma's husband, Mr. Hunter, is next to her. And next to Tammy, on our left, is small Tammy in the braids. She was named after Tammy. And Majo, he is on Tammy's lap there. And then in the back are the ladies from the Bible study that we spent a lot of time with. And not all of them are in this picture, but these ladies are the ones that we really spent a lot of time with. The next picture I'll show you is that's Tammy, small Tammy and Majo together. Tammy actually made the connection with small Tammy's mother when she was pregnant. She was sick and she had nowhere to go, and she came to Tammy's door, and Tammy took her to the hospital and paid for her medication and the things she needed. And then when the baby was born, they named her small Tammy. And you see that a lot. There's big diamond and small diamond and... This is Titus. He's one of Gary's seminary students, and if I had one word to describe Titus, it would absolutely be humble. He is a humble man of God. He is assistant pastor at a church in Liberia, and he was going to seminary and had Gary as a teacher. He is unpaid. He has absolutely no income to speak of. He is the only Liberian that Tammy said they would leave their kids with. And so oftentimes if Tammy and Gary wanted to do something together, they would call on Titus to come and sit with their kids. He's just a wonderful, wonderful guy. He made himself available to us. Anytime we were going anywhere, it was nice to have a Liberian with you because you didn't get hassled. If we didn't have a Liberian with us, we'd just get kind of, people would yell a lot at us or try to swindle us out of what we were buying. They'd try to get a little more money than what it was worth. And Tammy knew how to deal with them, but it was just much easier if we had a Liberian with us. And Titus came a lot with us. Whenever we needed him, he was there for us. And he never, ever, ever asked for a thing, which was amazing to me because, we brought with us more money than he's probably seen in his lifetime just to care for our food and our clothing and our traveling, and yet he never asked for one thing. And to me, that was just, it was amazing, because lots of people, you don't even know them, and they'll have their hand out when you walk by. But Titus wasn't that way at all. He's desires to get more training, Bible training. He wants to learn his Greek and Hebrew better so he can go back up to the bush country where he's from. He's from the tribe of Bunga up in the bush, and he wants to go back up there and evangelize his people and bring the gospel to them and translate the Bible into their native language. So his hope is just to be a missionary in his own country. And it's hard to get the training because they've closed the seminaries. So he hopes to get some more training. That's his goal. Because of the money that the church gave me to go over to Liberia, as a church, we gave Titus $150. And if I would not be at all surprised if he gave it all to his church. But I was hoping that he would use it to take care of his daily needs and stuff. But I told him it was just a gift from all of us. He's very, very poor. He lives in a very humble house that's not his. He sleeps on a mat on a dirt floor, but yeah, I never once heard him complain. He's just a content man of God, and he was a huge blessing to me. And I hope that God will help me or our church or in some way to be able to be a blessing to Titus in the future. The next picture is of Emmanuel. Winty is his wife, and then Blessing is their little girl there. This is another one of Gary's seminary students, Emmanuel. Is part of something called LCMI. It's Liberian Christian Missions International, and they have three works: a church, And then at that same building, they run a free school. So all the kids that want to come that they can house, they will educate them for free. And also an orphanage. And they, it's just a wonderful, wonderful family. Had so many good times with them and laugh. And they would laugh at me because I didn't understand them. And it was great. We really connected. And it's amazing how when you know Jesus and they're Liberian and they know Jesus, you have that instant connection. And I loved spending time with this family. He's a pastor of that church, and he also is the administrator at the free school there. His parents started a orphanage in 2005. After the Civil War, his parents, this is his father, is in his 70s, and he started the orphanage. And it's right now it has 50 children, but they're adding on so they can have 80 children. And I'm tired with five. And he's in his 70s and, of course, has help, him and his wife. But they started the orphanage. And it's a beautiful orphanage. I didn't get to go see it, but I know from Gary and Tammy, it's a great orphanage. The children are loved. It's an exception of orphanages in Liberia. But that's part of the LCMI ministry. I'll go back. Can I go back one? Oh, yeah. Whoops. There we go. Now, this is Emmanuel and Winty and Blessing. And Blessing was actually adopted through the orphanage because Emmanuel and Winty haven't been able to have children of their own. And a young girl who was up in the bush where the orphanage was raped, and she asked to give her baby when she was born to the orphanage. And Emmanuel said, I have a better place for her. And Emmanuel and Winty were able to adopt Blessing. They were actually at the hospital when she was born, and they just signed Emmanuel and Winty as the birth parents, which is something that couldn't happen here, but it was a great thing to be able to happen for them. And so Blessing is their little girl. They also have three boys that are living with them that just had no home. So they just took him in, and Emmanuel calls them his sons. It's just a beautiful thing. Emmanuel chauffeured us around whenever we needed it. He was just wonderful, always there and available to us. He's the only one I saw with a computer, which has really turned out to be a great thing because we've been able to keep in contact since I've been home. He's on Facebook, of all things. And he has email, and so we've been able to get information, and it's just been really nice to have that contact because otherwise I feel like, what's going on there and what's happened? But because he has that computer, we're able to keep in contact with him. Tammy had intended on asking Emmanuel to take over the bringing the food to the orphanage. And as she was telling him her struggle in finding someone, Emmanuel volunteers. So it was perfect. And Tammy had hesitated asking him because he's a very busy man already. And that was her only hesitation, but he volunteered to do it, and he will do excellent at helping at the orphanage because he knows how Liberians work and how Liberians think because he's a Liberian, and his parents run an orphanage. So he will do a wonderful job. He was with us and drove us to the orphanage every time we were there. He knows the owners. He knows the difficulties of running an orphanage, so he will do a fabulous job. They also run a free school there at as part of his ministry, which is right across the street from his house. And the six teachers that work there are all volunteer. So they come 5 days a week and they volunteer to teach these children. And sometimes they get paid if there's money donated to the ministry and all their bills are paid, then the teachers can get paid that month. But it's not a expected thing. So as part of the money that we had as a church, we paid all the teachers' salary for the month of May, which was $10 each. But still, it was a huge gift to them. They made a big ceremony. It was wonderful, and it was a really big deal. We also did a craft with the school kids there, and you'll see them in the slides. Tammy taught a Bible lesson, and we had candy. We just spent a whole day there working with that ministry. And we were also able to give Emmanuel and Winty $150, helping us get everywhere, picking us up from the airport, and driving us around and bringing us back to the airport. They were a huge blessing to us. And it was, let's see, I think you can turn this off now. it was on that last day that we were there that Emmanuel asked if we would like to go to the Liberian Cultural Center. Because Emmanuel is he's a very educated man, and he spent a year in England during the Civil War. So he's very educated, and he understands that his country is backwards, we would consider backwards. So they just do things differently, and it's going to take a long time to see change in Liberia. But yet he loves his country, and he has a great love for his people. And so he asked if he could take us to the Liberian Cultural Center that last day to show us some of the beauty of Liberia, because you often don't get to see the beautiful part of it. You see the sadness and the poverty. So Tammy and I thought that was a great idea, because we would fly out at night, so in the morning we could spend the day kind of being tourists. But God had a different plan. And as we were driving, Emmanuel suggested we drive through the back roads, because it was just more lush and green and beautiful, and there were small villages along the way. And I was preoccupied with trying to take pictures, because when you're there, adults really don't like you to take their picture a lot, because they're aware of their poverty, and for some rich white American lady to be taking pictures of it is kind of rude. And so I had the camera at the window, and every time we slowed down, I tried to take pictures. Because I wanted pictures, but I didn't want to offend anybody. So I was preoccupied with trying to take pictures. And we drove past a small village, and there was a large group of ladies on the side of the road, and they were all yelling and screaming. And I thought they were fighting over something or haggling over a price or something. And Emmanuel and Winty were talking to each other, and then they pulled off to the side of the road, and I didn't really know what was going on. And then a young lady came, and she came and jumped in the back seat of the car, and she was very upset and screaming and yelling to take her to the hospital, take her to the hospital. And Emmanuel said, I know how to get there. We will be right there. And we were maybe 10 miles from the hospital. And she was just sobbing and very distraught and just screaming and yelling and sitting right next to me. And I put my arm around her, and she started crying, "My baby, my baby." And it was then that I realized she had these blankets on her lap. And so Tammy opened up the blankets, and there was a beautiful little girl. She was a week old, and she was really thin, which didn't necessarily surprise me, because a lot of people are thin. I mean, food isn't abundant, but she was very thin and just beautiful and perfect. And her name was Sia, which meant firstborn in one of the tribal languages. And she was just distraught and screaming about her baby. And when we opened up the blankets, we knew right away that she was gone. So we felt for a heartbeat, and she was cool, and so we knew. But we didn't have the heart to tell the mama. And I think her name was Evelyn, and I think she knew. She had some sort of hope that if we got to a hospital that Sia would be okay. And so we sat, and she was weeping, and I had my arm around her, and I began to pray, because, I mean, I can't even keep it together right now. So I kept it together, but it was only because of God, and I kept asking the whole time. It was 10 minutes. It felt like an eternity. But God, please give me grace. Please give me strength, because I'm gonna lose it. I'm just gonna fall apart, and I'm not gonna be able to help this lady. I'll be completely ineffective. And he held me together, because I couldn't hold myself together. And as I began to pray for a miracle, I just couldn't, because I knew she was gone. And so I just asked God to give grace to Evelyn and to wrap his arms around her and to help her, because she was inconsolable, which all of us would be. So So when we got to the hospital, she ran in at me. We had him behind her, and a nurse came right up to her. And she was screaming about her baby, and the nurse put the stethoscope on her and said, "Your baby is dead. Go home." And, of course, she couldn't. So Wendy took little Sia and took her to the car, and we helped her walk back out to the car and told her we would take her home. And on the way there, she told us what had happened. She had woke up early that morning, and Sia had a fever. And so she began walking to the clinic that was closest to their house. And when she got to the clinic, it was already open, and several people were waiting, and they wouldn't see her, and she was desperate to get her baby seen, and they wouldn't see her, and she didn't know what else to do, so she began to walk to the road, hoping someone would stop at the road and take her to the hospital. And we were the first and only car to stop. So she had done a lot that day for her baby to try and help her baby. So we figured as maybe she had walked about 12 miles, because by the time we had got to her house, it had been about that. And she was very poor, and she lived way off the road. Then we had to walk a ways to get to her house. She was very poor, and right outside there's just this huge pond of water, which I'm sure is a breeding ground for malaria, right outside her door. So as we walked, people kind of saw what was going on, and she was very distraught and crying, and we walked into the house, and we laid Sia on her bed, and she came out, and several people had gathered now near the house, and we got her a chair, and Emmanuel. Emmanuel just demanded that she stop crying. And I thought, what is he doing? She's grieving. So I went and I sat next to her, and he said, "You need to stop crying. I'm going to pray for you right now." And he knew exactly what he was doing. He stopped her and prayed for her and prayed that God would give her grace and that he would comfort her at this time. And then he asked for the number for the father, and then he called Samuel and told him what had happened and asked Samuel to come back to the house and to be with Evelyn. And by this time, Evelyn was screaming and crying all over again, and people were, maybe about 30 people had gathered around, and little kids and adults, and no one else was crying. I didn't really understand that. I think maybe it was just because we were there, and they were more interested in what was going on. So I just went and was holding Evelyn, and Emmanuel demanded that she stop crying. And he said, "I will not allow Sia to die in vain." And he turned to everyone around him, and he said that because Sia died today, God brought us to you. And he did it for a reason. Sia died so that you might hear the gospel. And he gave the gospel message to the whole group right there. And I was sitting next to the mama, and I was like, "God, is this really happening? This looks like a book, like something you read in a book." But it really was happening. And I just prayed, "God, give them grace. Open their ears to hear. Please, God, give them grace." And Emmanuel asked, after he gave the gospel, he asked if anyone wanted to accept Jesus, he was going to pray right now, and that they should pray along with him. And I was sitting right there, and about 12 to 15 people, along with Evelyn, the mama, prayed that God would save them. And I don't know people's hearts. I don't know if they were truly converted right then. But I do know that the gospel was given and that Sia did not die in vain. Later on that day, well, right afterwards, Tammy and I had some money we were going to spend at the cultural center, and I was going to buy the kids at the church candy, and we just gave it all to Emmanuel, and he gave it to Evelyn to give a funeral to Sia. And we went and we're getting ready to go back to our house so that we could pack and get ready for the airplane ride. And Emmanuel got a call from Samuel, who is the baby's father, and he said to thank him for helping provide for the funeral. And he asked if he could meet with Winty and Emmanuel. And since I've been home, I've got emails from Emmanuel that said they have met with Evelyn and with Samuel, and they've begun discipleship with them, and that they truly believe their conversion to be real. So that was my worst and my most amazing day in Liberia. Yeah, I had a plan, but God had a better one. 1 Samuel 2:7 says, "The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he exalts." So God knows what's going on in Liberia. He knows their daily struggles of just living. In many ways, they're more ripe for salvation than we Americans are, because we're so easily distracted by our true need of Jesus because we're comfortable. We are easily lulled away from living as we should by our homes, our landscaping, our hobbies, the internet, our wallets, and our full pantries. But Liberians are daily aware of their needs. And what they need more than anything is hope. Lamentations 3 says, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him." And hope is really what Liberians need. Psalm 9:18 says, "For the needy shall not always be forgotten, and the hope of the poor shall not perish forever." And the hope of the poor is Jesus. It's not mansions, it's not clothes, it's not all-you-can-eat buffets, it's Jesus. And if there was anything I learned, it was that no matter what I was able to give them, nothing was more valuable than the living water and the bread of life. And nothing was better than Jesus. I can have a slideshow now of just people and things and that happened in Liberia and what took place, and then I'll give an update on the orphanage. with just a lot of the countryside and the people we met, and I hope that he got a good understanding of what Liberia is. And I don't want to stress all the negative, because there is wonderful things about Liberia, especially the missionaries that I met there and those Liberians who love the Lord. Those are the best people to reach their own people. And I absolutely loved my time there. So it is a great memory, not a terrible memory. I do have pictures that are coming now. This is of, let's see. I know everyone wanted to see me getting my hair braided. I am in a great deal of pain right there. Tammy kept trying to get this. She said, "You wince every time they pull, and I'm trying to get that picture." And I said, "Thank you. Thank you very much." And so I have to share Tammy's too then. So it was painful, but it was worth it in the long run. The last thing I'll talk about is the orphanage. We encourage the missionaries, we encourage the ladies, and the last thing was to find someone to care for the orphanage. There is a chronic problem in Liberia with the way they deal with orphans and with children. And in fact, on my very first day there, right before we went to see Tammy's house, as we were walking to Tammy's house, right next door, they had neighbors there who are not missionaries. There were a relief aid worker. Came running out to the road to say, "Tammy, you're back." And she was so happy to see Tammy. And she said, "You have to come inside. I have a problem I don't know what to do with." And so we came inside, and she was a nurse that worked at Redemption Hospital, the same hospital that we had brought Evelyn to. And she is Liberian. And she said, "I don't know what to do with this little girl." She was at the hospital. She was left there by her mother, and there were two other babies that were left there, and they died, but she just won't die. And so she said, "I asked permission to take her home. We don't know anything about her. We don't know how old she is. We don't know her name, but we're calling her Grace." And she has very little strength in her legs, and her neck, one side of her neck muscles are non-existent or just weak, and so her head turns to the side, and she can't speak. She laughs and she smiles, but she can't speak. And she actually gained a lot of weight since this nurse had taken her home. And she said, "But we can't keep her. We're not okay with having her. Tammy, we need you to find someone to take her. Maybe some of the orphanages that you know about will take her now that she's stronger." So I have her picture here. It's Grace. She just has, the only hope she has is Jesus. Not many Liberians would take in a baby. In fact, the other nurses there in the hospital with her said, "She has juju, which is witchcraft. Don't take her home, because at night she turns into a snake and she swallows people." Which is ridiculous. And do they really believe that? And Winty said it's a common misconception that people who are deformed in some way or have a disability, that that's why they have it, because of juju, because of witchcraft. And so while we were there, Emmanuel came to see her, and it's a possibility that she may be able to go and stay at his father's orphanage, and he had more connections, and so he was hoping to find someone, even like a permanent foster care that would adopt or take in Grace, because they're not allowing adoptions now in Liberia unless you are Liberian and you can adopt, but they do make exceptions for special needs. So you can pray for Grace. She does need your prayers. Another family that we met when they were there that are missionaries are the Yoders. That's James and Lucretia. He is in charge of something called Orphan Relief, which is a Mennonite-based program. He is in charge of it, so he has helped develop it, and they've lived there 6 years. They're actually leaving in June. But since he's been there, he's got in charge of 70 orphanages in Liberia, and what he does is when he finds out about an orphanage, if they have the funds, because it's like a state-funded thing where you adopt a child, that's the kind of thing that he runs. He find an orphanage and then research them and see in what ways you can help them. He knows a lot about how orphanages are run there. And what his ministry does is provide food and clothing and medical treatment and pay for education for them. He helped me understand how they work and told me that after the Civil War, which ended in 2003, orphanages sprang up all around Liberia. But then in the past 5 years, that number has tripled, which doesn't lead the cause to be civil war. It's something else. And the three reasons that he gave were the first reason that orphanages have been popping up is for profit, because many people see it as a business opportunity. Some extort children or sell them to the sex trade or sell them for profit for those who are willing to adopt from other countries. And oftentimes that's just a ruse of adoption, and adoption never really takes place. They will get as much money as they can out of that person, and then they will say, oh, the child died, or the child had parents and they went back home, or whatever they can do to get the money that they want. Another reason orphanages have increased is that many Liberians will give their children to orphanages in hopes that they will be adopted, in hopes that they will go to America and have a different life. And some disrepute orphanage owners will actually solicit vulnerable Liberians to give them their children, and with great promises of, I will have them adopted and they will be healthy, and so they give their children in hopes of doing that. And one of the last reasons is because jobs are so scarce and money is not available that some people will take in orphans in the hope of getting attention from outside parties and outside donors. And then those outside donors will provide food and clothing, and then they can also eat as well. Now, the orphans are more of, they get the attention from people, and then my family can eat as well because of that. James, which is the man here, he mentioned how very common all of that was. In fact, when an orphanage asked for help from his relief organization, there was a whole process that they had to develop to get them to go through. Because many times he would visit and they would say, yes, we have 50 children here, we need food, we need clothing, and he would say, oh, okay, well, I will come and I will bring you an initial food bank. And he would come and there would be 50, 60, 70 children there. And then he would come at a different time and there'd be 20. And he would say, well, where are all the children? Oh, they're here, and they're off at school. And they would come at a different time, and there would be 10. And he was very confused by that. And so they started coming in the middle of the night. And then they would find out how many kids were really there. Because when they knew he was coming, they would invite children from all around to come and be here for the day. So then he will count you, and then we'll get extra rice. And then we can sell that extra rice and make a profit on the side. And so they had developed this whole system of how to give them relief, food relief, and they have never ever been able to give them money because they won't use it for its intention. They'll use it for other purposes. So it was always just in food and necessities for the children. And because of all of these abuses of the orphans, their president, Liberia's president, Ellen Sirleaf, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, she put a moratorium on all adoptions, which it kind of sounds good because of the abuses. But at the same time, there's a moratorium on all adoptions, but Liberia is not providing for the orphans now. Now they're on their own. The government gives them no help, occasionally very donated food, but it's not something they can count on. So these orphans are without family and without their daily needs, and orphans in Liberia today with the moratorium on adoption have very little hope of ever being adopted. Because things move so slowly in Liberia. To be able to get this around, to be able to get the regulations they need to provide legitimate adoptions. And I was there for, 15 days? And I heard three different stories from three different people about being cheated through adoption. And it was heartbreaking. The Dunsey's own story is heartbreaking. This is a picture of Matea. The Dunseys went to an orphanage called Acres of Hope that was run by a woman named Patty. And I can't remember if she said they went with the intent of adoption or they were just checking it out. I can't remember. But it's a very difficult story for Tammy to tell. And in fact, when we were there, people would say, "Have you seen Matea? How is she?" She would say very sweetly, "She is wonderful and she's beautiful and she's loved, and that's all we're going to talk about." Because it was very hard for her. They went to the orphanage and they talked to Patty and told them they were looking for a little girl, and, you know, to pray about it. And they went home and they went and prayed about it. And about 2 weeks later, they got a call from Patty saying, "I think I have a little girl that might work for your family. Will you come in and meet her?" So they went and they met her, and she did not have a name, and Patty said she didn't know where she came from, and she just showed up on their door, and the first ones they thought of was the Dunseiths, and, you know, "We could start the process now. There's initial fees that need to be done and paperwork that needs to be filled out, and we need to locate her ties to her family so someone can sign off on the adoption papers, and a fairly simple process since the Dunseiths were in the country." And they even said, "You can take her and provide her food and her clothing and her education, and then you won't have to pay us that fee." So it seemed perfect. And Matea came into their home, and she's very easy to love. She's just a really sweet little girl. And she didn't have a name. And so Gary and Tammy decided on the name Matea, which I think is beautiful. And she didn't give many details at all. She can talk, and she can, I mean, she's a very intelligent little girl, but she didn't give any details about her background. Every once in a while, things would slip out, and they would try to piece together things that she would say about a village, and they had no idea. They thought maybe, you know, something had happened to her that she didn't want to speak about. So she lived with them for 8 months, and it was getting close to the finalization of their adoption, and the orphanage was asking for the final payment, and Gary said, "No, I'm not giving you any more money until this is done," because they understood that this moratorium on adoptions was going to take place. And so their caseworker said, "Let's go before the judge. He has all the paperwork. Let's go before him. He will sign it, and the adoption will be finalized." And Gary said, "Fine." So they went. And he and his caseworker stood before the judge, and the judge said, "Why are you here?" And Gary said, "For the adoption. You have the paperwork. I want to fully adopt Matea. We've had her for 8 months." And the judge said, "I don't have any paperwork." And he looked at the caseworker, the guy, and the guy just shook his head. He'd done nothing. There was nothing. So they loved Matea. They still love Matea. But the judge was very compassionate to him, and very nice, and he said, "There is no adoption to be done, and you need to give Matea right back to the orphanage, and this is over." And of course, they weren't willing to give up that easily, and Gary went for a number of days and was at the judge's door begging for something to happen, for some sort of movement, and the judge said, I'm not without a heart. I have compassion for your situation, and I will give you some time to possibly find a Liberian family that Matea could be adopted to." Well, there was a Liberian family that already had contacted Gary and Tammy and said, "We will take Matea." And that is not what their hope was. Their hope was to be able to keep her. But Hawa and Thomas have Matea now, and she's loved and she's cared for. But it still broke their heart. And even when we were there, it was very difficult and wonderful to spend time with Matea, because she's a sweet, wonderful little girl. And just to know that this is not an original story is even harder to understand. And the orphanage that Gary and Tammy help support, and I'll try to hurry through this, is owned by Othello and Mafatu. Othello has some great affection for the children there. Mafatu, not so much. She does not have any motherly affection for the children. She carries around a stick and she uses it. And she has favorites and she gives demands. And I didn't like her a whole lot. So I tried to cut her out of all my pictures, which probably isn't the best thing. But you won't see many pictures of her. Emmanuel is taking over bringing the rice to them, which Othello was very unhappy with because he likes to deal through Gary and Tammy, but he understands who Emmanuel is, and Emmanuel is a man, and he is a Liberian, so he understands how things work. So he's going to take care of providing the rice for them, and he will never give them money. He'll only give what's needed to care for the children. Even while we were there, they said they had 35 children, but we only ever counted 20. And we were there four different times, four different days, and so even that was a little bit suspicious. The children are very, very lovable. They're easy to love. They're beautiful. And they're needy. Our very first visit, some of them weren't wearing much clothing at all, but afterwards they were all fully clothed because I guess we were coming and they assumed that we were coming. They're eager to be loved and held. Some have never, ever known what parental love or care is. They were dirty and they smelled and I got peed on. And they probably had lice and scabies, but when I was there, I never even thought 1 minute about it. I played with them a lot, and I held them as often as I could. And I told them as often as possible that Jesus loved them. I wanted to say that I loved them, because I really did feel a great love and affection for them, but I thought, you know what, I'm going to leave. So that's not really fair for me to say that. So I told them as often as I could that Jesus loved them because I know he would never leave them or forsake them. And it wasn't about me, it was about him. In a minute, I'll show the slideshow of the orphanage and then I'll be done. Yes, it's as poor as it looks. I would have to say that it's one thing to see the orphans and it's another to touch them and smell them and hug them and love them. And I feel privileged to have been able to do that. And I thank the church for helping me to be able to minister there. I thought a lot about you guys and what am I going to say and how am I going to communicate that and how am I going to give them this picture. And besides bringing the name of Jesus and his love to the orphanage, we were able to buy lots of treats for them. Lots of candy, and also yellow beans. They loved yellow beans over their rice, so we bought a whole big bag for them. We also bought crafts, and we did crafts and nail polish and Hot Wheel cars and lipstick. And while I was there, I even purchased spoons, which was something they'd never used. So you'll see them all holding spoons, if you know why. That's why. The last picture you'll see is of Buster. Buster was born paralyzed. And I'll read a kind of a eulogy that Tammy wrote about Buster, and then we can start the video. If you turn up the music just a little bit this time. A young boy whose life we have been blessed to be a part of passed away after a struggle with stomach issues yesterday morning. His name is Buster. He has never had a family, never been able to walk, never been able to speak. Sometimes he was forgotten about by those around him, and sometimes he was an inconvenience to his caretakers, and sometimes he went hungry and thirsty. This all sounds terribly sad to us. However, Buster always smiled. This boy's life was a testimony that even when we are naked, weak, hungry, and abandoned, we are clothed in Christ's righteousness. We are filled with the bread of life and the living water. We are never forsaken or forgotten by our Heavenly Father, and we are always complete in Him. Buster now stands, dances, sits, and kneels on his once impaired legs before our great Savior with songs and praises singing from his once muted lips. What a blessed day for Buster.